Welcome back to the Emerge podcast. On this episode, I'm speaking with Gary Shang. Gary is one of the founders of Civics Unplugged. Civics Unplugged is a nonprofit social enterprise that empowers Gen Z leaders to become civic innovators in their local communities and in their national political world. Basically, he's creating, educating, training, and linking up a network of young people who are dedicated to systems change. Gary is a fascinating person because he stands at the intersection and functions as a bridge between so many different critical scenes, whether it's the younger generation, Gen Z, or it's the Web3 space, or it's the meta-modern space, or the American politics space. He's talking to so many different people and has his finger on the pulse of so many emerging possibility landscapes. And so, and with all that, he's actually taking action in a way that, at least few people that I have on this show who, if I skew in one direction, it's probably towards thinkers and practitioners, not so much towards builders. And Gary is a builder. And so I'm really excited to bring this conversation to you. As we discuss, Gary will be at the Emerge conference in late June, as will I. And so I'm, strategically releasing this conversation ahead of that conference in order to use whatever amount of influence I have to, invite a certain kind of critical perspective, perhaps, into the discourse that I'm sure will be very rich at the conference. We talk about certain things we'd like to see happen, certain projects or initiatives that perhaps might launch from this Emerge gathering. As always, happy to hear feedback or perspectives. If you'd like to share them, you can email me at dthorson@gmail.com or you can at me on Twitter. Without further monologuing, here is Gary Shang on the Emerge podcast. Welcome back to the Emerge podcast. Today on the show, my guest is Gary Shang. Gary Shang is the, co-founder of Civics Unplugged, and what would you say your role is in the Dream DAO? I don't want to mislabel you.
Yeah, I'm like the, so in the DAO world, there's like this emerging term called steward.
Right. Cool. I thought it might be something like that. Okay, cool.
Yes, steward. And I've been pushing the funny, less businessy name, Chief Alchemist.
Right on.
As well.
Cool. Yeah. And so I met Gary, I think, through John Vervaeke. And we had a conversation about 2 months ago or so. And I didn't really, actually, I think you reached out to me maybe to schedule a conversation. And it was really, I think what I said at the end of the conversation, if I recall correctly, very hopeful. I felt very hopeful after the time we spent together. And that's because in part, on this podcast in my life, I talk to a lot of theorists and thinkers, practitioners, and Gary is those things certainly, but primarily I view you as a builder and a creator and a kind of bridge between different worlds. And you're actually out there talking to people, trying to get people to collaborate in new ways, trying to bridge networks that might not currently see each other very well right now. And that to me is very fascinating. What you reported to me last time was very fascinating, and we'll get to that. And part of this is that, recently you've kind of come into the, what we call like liminal or game B web, right? You aren't a longtime member of this community, but instead it's a kind of recent exposure. And I think you have a unique perspective on how and what the significance of this kind of network is in the larger context that you see and that you're a part of because of the work you do. And so I'm just really excited to talk to you and hear about your perspective and share it with the audience of this podcast. So welcome to the podcast, Gary.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, it was an amazing conversation we had a couple months ago. And excited to be part of whatever web we want to call, whatever mesh network we want to say we're part of. I think there's a lot of opportunity to take everyone's individual work and our collective work to the next level if we're really thoughtful about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So maybe by way of kind of building kind of shared reality, would love for you to share a little bit about like your work with Civics Unplugged. And I have a sense that your work in Civics Unplugged has kind of like led to the DreamDAO project. But yep. I'd love for you to kind of just fill out both of those for folks who are listening.
So, yeah, how far back do we want to go? I guess, yeah. Why don't we go a little bit further back than maybe our first conversation? I'm not sure if we touch on this, but I think it's useful to know that my story, actually pretty practically speaking, starts in 1964, when communist stormtroopers came into my grandpa's villa in China and ripped him apart from his wife and kids, including my dad, threw him into a truck and sent him to a re-education camp in rural part of China. My dad didn't see his dad for 6 years, which is just nuts. And he was 4 years old when his dad was taken away. So you can imagine like how that affects your childhood. My dad had a really big chip on his shoulder, maybe in big part because the government forced him and his sister to change their family name to not be my grandpa's name, my family name, to shame them. I think we know that in Eastern cultures, family is just above like everything, right? Which is kind of why the Communist Party today, they want to make the party be the family. It's an interesting transmutation, right? But my dad worked really hard to become number one at math in his grade in his city, and worked really hard to become number one at math, or to get into the Harvard of China, Beijing University, Peking University. Then was lucky to have gotten, and worked hard to test into Louisiana State University as one of the first grad school students from China to be able to travel to the US. Brought my mom over. This is the time of the one-child policy and also a consciousness uprising in China, where people started to demonstrate in Tiananmen Square and other parts of the country. And my dad actually held solidarity demonstrations in LSU during this time, which is kind of crazy. My dad was born, well, sorry, my brother was born around that time, March of 1989. And, you know, those demonstrations in China kept getting bigger and bigger, right? And then, you know, June, tens of thousands of people that look like me got massacred for trying to push society forward, basically. And the only reason why, it's funny that, you know, before we, you know, started filming this, we were talking about Austin and my travels to Austin, my travels to Austin this coming month. So it's interesting. Texas has in an interesting way, like a sacred role in my life, because the former governor of Texas, George H.W. Bush, if he didn't pass the Chinese Student Protection Act, I wouldn't have been born, because it allowed my parents to have political asylum in the US. So literally tens of thousands of people look like me in China getting massacred, plus arguably some of the best qualities of America coming out through the Chinese Student Protection Act is why I'm able to be born. So like that, I think about that a lot, you know, with my work today. It's like, I actually did not think about that story at all when I kind of pretty organically got into future of democracy, youth empowerment work. Like, it's interesting how that full circle really, but you know, the first, how did I, you know, just come to really appreciate integral, liminal, meta, like whatever we want to call it. The first 22 years of my life were pretty much just like blindly following the social, academic, and career expectations that I felt like society was imposing on me. I was lucky to have gotten to a good high school, then got to Duke University and good internships, great job at Google in New York City. When I traveled to New York City for full time, I really had only kind of like two goals. Number one was to go to and host cool parties. And the other one was to get promoted. I was very good at both. All like within a year, it's like fastest, you know, either tied for fastest, like promoted person my age at Google across the organization, and all within like a year. And but then Trump got elected, and it's easy to focus on the name Trump. Like 2016 election in general showed just how fragile our democracy was, and I didn't know why. Like, I didn't have a good idea of what to do about that. Still figuring it out to this day, but I kind of blindly jumped into a online activism of the anti-Trump sort, pretty partisan perspective, and I was very good at tapping into the psyche of myself, really, first of all, because I actually really was pissed. I was so pissed at what at that election result, and I was very good at tapping into the outrage about it. In 2017 alone, got a billion impressions. Well, that was really the year that I was active. I got very good very quickly. A billion impressions on Facebook, spending $0. And that, there's few people that understand just how social media is power and danger to society. Because I really knew how to wield that power, right? There, if you saw multiple police brutality videos in 2017, there's a chance, pretty high chance, that you saw one of the ones I helped engineer to go viral. Just from the framing of it, how the you know, video was cut up. Like, there's plenty of reason to be outraged and to share, right? But like, there's a lot of like little things that you do to really hit at people's guts. The reason why I stopped doing that was for two reasons. Number one, the person I was working with, who is still one of the most famous activists in the world, I volunteered for him for hundreds of hours. This is all while I was at Google. And he would not get on the phone with me. Never. He would never go. I was just like, hey, like, I have some ideas. You want to talk it out? I was totally volunteering, by the way. Like, this is how you treat your volunteers. I built that 800,000 paid follower page for him. And then the other more important thing was, so why that was significant, and he also lived 2 miles away from me. There's a new, you know, not going to give too much more information there, but yeah, like, we could easily meet up whenever. And so that really helped me understand, okay, you know, don't like, of course, meet some of your heroes, right? Because they can be great, but some of them can be really awful. And that, as obvious as it may sound to listeners, yeah, there's not great people in every part of society, right? Any side. But the second and more important reason why I stopped doing that was because my ex told me I was not fun to be around anymore. And that really hit me because I was a party. I was not only a party goer, I hosted parties, right? Where the point is to have fun. I had 24 parties in New York and LA, parties and concerts in New York and LA, like including boat parties, including, you know, pool parties, including a stage at a music festival. And so I just was like, okay, this is making me a person that people can't stand to be around. And it was true. I could barely stand to be around myself. I was becoming so negative. And just like a tool of like hyper-polarized dynamics and political duopoly. So I just spent 2018 just learning about, just openly about everything I could, philosophy, different sciences, especially got fixated on just the state of our democracy and how we are engineered to be pit against each other and blame each other instead of a system. I just became obsessed with systems thinking. In 2019, early 2019, I met my venture co-founder, Civics Unplugged, who realized that, the structure of our system, if we don't start teaching kids to see the system instead of just people, right, we are going to, keep being victimized by the dynamics that make us try to find easy outs, right, for all of our crises that we're facing and this meta crisis that we're facing. So there was, there's still very few funder type people that are able to, that even want to talk about something that is synonymous with meta crisis, omni crisis. So I think I had been someone that was starting, co-founding Civics Unplugged with that intention of creating like almost like a meta crisis leadership incubator for high schoolers. And why high schoolers? Because I truly believe that by the time that you're in college, you're captured. And this is oversimplification, of course.
Like, right.
Individuals are individuals, right? But again, I actually believe what I'm helping teach, which is systems thinking. As soon as I got to college, people were talking about elite internships and career paths. In high school, you are a little bit less, Google's not at your career fair for high school yet. Although they have Google Classroom, right? There's so many products. I mean, they're just, right. Once you get to college, the pipeline just is immediately begins where like you have upperclassmen just talking about like which big tech company that they want to work at, or Goldman Sachs or something. And of course, like preferences change, but like, I know like activist progressive kids that have taken internships at JP Morgan, right? And that's because at the end of the day, when you take on a tremendous amount of student debt,
right,
you can only afford to take certain kind of roles to pay off that student debt. Otherwise you become infeasible to live life. So I've examined these dynamics just from myself and my peers, and then like mentees of mine that have to make these calculations as people that do not want to be feeding the status quo, but they also don't want to be debtors for the rest of their lives. So high school is super key in helping them develop strong enough identity if they do go to college to stick to civic pursuits, right? And spiritual, like higher pursuits than being a cog in the machine.
Right.
And this is, so Singh also say, like, yes, we've of course marketed ourselves as, and we are, right? We are civic education, but it's just so much broader, right, than in our ambitions of like the impact of, you know, are so much broader than like, you know, the three branches of government. And we don't teach that actually. We expect that, you know, in at least in the US, you're forced to do US history and government 101 in most high schools. And you can learn a lot of that stuff on YouTube and right. It's like, so what is not being taught? I think you and I have that sense. It is that sort of practical, integral thinking that can allow you to see what's happening first and maybe be able to develop solutions that are innovative enough, inspiring enough to move the needle on different pieces of the meta crisis.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, for folks, I highly suggest if you're listening and you're in front of a computer to go to civicsunplugged.org because it's a beautiful website. And you'll see there that they have listed on the front page that there's 2000 plus alumni. Now that means, correct me if I'm wrong, Gary, but there are more than 2000, I say like Gen Z systems change educated leaders that have been through this program. And been trained, and both, you know, we might say in the parlance of the kinds of people listen to this podcast who are like meta crisis aware, systems theoretically grounded, and are networked together so that they can live a life that is actually in service of creating a new kind of world that is sustainable.
Yep. So
that's pretty dope. Like that's pretty significant. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, we're spread across 70. I mean, we don't have like branches, right? But we our first program was just in the US. And then after the first program, we had kids from around the world knocking on our virtual door, asking to be a part of it because they sensed that this was different than other things that were offered. And now we have 70 plus countries represented.
Yeah.
So like I've, you know, one of my mentees is a Russian kid with Ukrainian roots. And so you can imagine like how helpful it is to have a friend like that in your digital community.
Yeah.
Like to get, help you get, have perspective on what's happening in the world. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm bringing five of those young people to Emerge.
Oh, the Emerge conference in Austin.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh, I'm so excited.
And that's great. You know, I was very upfront with like Tomas Bjorkman, who's like one of the lead organizers of Emerge. I was like, we're going to bring like, hopefully like 30 to the next one, but still start with five and help people in the Emerge community self demand, right? Like more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And more investment.
Yeah. And so am I right? Like, so then I read a little bit about, so Civics Unplugged is a super fascinating project in its own right. And you've cultivated through that. And you know, it's only what, like 3-4 years old, Civics Unplugged?
Exactly 3 years old.
3 years old. And then you've recently started architecting and, you know, as you say, stewarding, but being, I think, kind of the founding catalyst for this thing called DreamDAO, which I have a sense is sort of like emerging out of the network that you have created in Civics Unplugged. This network of, again, Gen Z kind of, we might say, and you know, if we apply labels to it, like these kind of like meta-modern Gen Z, like Game B oriented people who are now educated and networked together. So can you maybe describe like a little bit about what DreamDAO is, just so that we get that in the picture too.
Yeah, so 8 months ago, I met some people that had been full-time in the crypto Web3 space for the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. And they were like, what you're doing at Civics Unplugged is amazing. Believe it or not, Web3 is not just pure scams. And you know, these tools that are already being built and like the aspirations that we have, the culture that we're building, that will build more tools and change paradigms. Like these, Web3 is going to be a force for major change in the world. So you're training young civic innovators. They need to understand how Web3 can be used as a set of tools and culture for civic innovation. And I was very skeptical initially, and I guess there wasn't too much to lose, right, in giving it a shot, and being super early, right? Like there's no one doing anything like what we're doing, in part because there's a lot of prerequisites to being able to launch a sub community of civics, or just like a community of Gen Zers around the world that trust the leadership, because Gen Z doesn't trust anyone.
Yeah. Right.
Why would they, right? Like they've been failed by every adult. And to put it bluntly, like a lot of my mentees, they feel failed by, in some ways, by their parents, who, there's some horrifying stories. So best case, you trust your parents and you're grateful for their love, and you have no other adult that has, you've had a good experience with, because there's a lot of perverse incentives with school counselors and teachers to just like, not really educate you, right, but just to help you, get good test scores, there's like certain high schools that will kick you out if you aren't trying to go to college. They boost up their college acceptance rates. So there was like this viral post the other day of this one school in Chicago that has like 100% or 99%, I don't know, some really high percent matriculation rate to college. And so the original post was like, why is no one talking about this? And then someone commented, the reason no one's talking about this is because they kick out kids that are not going to go to college. So I part of why I feel so strongly about, there's endless reasons to feel strongly about teaching systems and incentives and, right, like how to make sense of the world, because people will game like incentive structures all the time, right? And they will use your life as, they'll treat your life as disposable to achieve certain metrics. That's the default, actually. It's not like, a lot of times, like, that's the default. So part of why it's hard to start a community of young people that are trying to explore and contribute to Web3 in an impactful way is because, well, let me give you what happened. I brought the idea in like October, and kids wrote a letter protesting that idea. They're saying blockchain's a scam and environmentally unfriendly. And you could take that in two ways, broadly, like, and be like pissed, like, oh, stupid kids. The other one's like, oh, like, you're actually grateful for, and I had a mixed reaction, I'll be honest.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, of course.
Like, grateful that I'm working with people that care. They're skeptical and because they care, right?
Well, and more than that, I mean, this is what's so, I think I walked away from our last conversation feeling this so directly. It's not just that they care, but it's like they know that their lives are at stake so directly. Yep. Like I have a teacher who talks about how like our like different generations' nervous systems are differently calibrated vis-a-vis like embodied knowing the actuality of the crisis that we're all facing.
Yeah.
Like they can't afford to get it wrong in the way that even we can. And certainly like my parents could.
I really feel that. I would argue that we all should feel in our nervous system. Mm-hmm. But millennials grew up in an environment, even just millennials, right? Like one generation above. Millennials grew up in an environment where we were implicitly taught that things were going to be great. And your job was just to climb the hierarchy. That's all. It's that simple, really. That's all anyone really talked about. Like, we talked about the best rapper. We talked about the best workplace. We talked about the best internship. We talked about the best frat. We talked about, like, that's the center of, like, every conversation. We're talking about the best coding language, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. What is the best major? Like, that was the center of every conversation that I had when I was growing up. And just optimizing, like, within this, like, thick assumption that things were progress was macro progress was a guarantee.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That myth was totally active and kind of, you know, punctured at the periphery of our culture, but not punctured in the way that I at least I hear from you in my sense, that Gen Z, like the cultural milieu of that generation is like, they do not see it that way anymore.
No. There's a great disillusionment about these old myths about, many different myths, as we know, that blinded us about what we should be doing.
I want to see if I can like kind of just like restate what my take on kind of like what Civics Unplugged and DreamDAO are kind of in a sense about. And this is like how I look at it, is that like through Civics Unplugged, you're kind of giving the sort of education that in a functional culture, at least a culture at the brink like ours, that young people will be getting. You're giving them systems theory, you're giving them like how to look at the actual problems of our culture and society and like start to get in traction with them and solve them. And you're building a network of young people who are very committed to living in integrity with the fact and actuality of the kind of systems breakdown that we are in, which by itself is super dope and like really exciting. And then there's DreamDAO, which I mean, I don't know as much about this project. I read a bunch of what I could find. And it sort of seems like you're creating a container through which the empowerment of Gen Z can be funded and actualized, like that they could then self-organize around building what I think you call, or the term that I've heard you use, like regenerative culture, that they can kind of cohere around that mimetic and sort of use the DreamDAO as a sort of funding and coordinating mechanism for their work.
Yeah. So it's not easy to simply describe what DreamDAO is, because a lot of it has been emergent. One way to talk about it is it's a sub-community of Civics Unplugged for alumni of our core Civics Unplugged Civic Innovators Fellowship to then deepen their interests in one aspect, which is the Web3. How do we leverage blockchain, tokens, etc., to make the world better? And, you know, we do some very practical things like twice a week lectures. And like we had the executive director of the Ethereum Foundation speak to our kids yesterday. And she said that, it's literally on recording, she said it was the most inspiring, or misheard it, right? But everyone was there. It's like, she said it was like the most inspiring moment of her career was talking to our kids.
I believe it. Yeah.
The person that works with Vitalik, right? And Ethereum is the most influential blockchain, beyond I mean, tied for first, let's say, with Bitcoin. So that was cool. and then we're also matching some of our most engaged kids with internships this summer at like really established, impactful Web3 organizations. And then eventually we're going to do, and we're flying kids out to trips to meaningful Web3 conferences so that they can like get this participatory experience and like build their own networks so that they're less dependent on this like Kickstart organization, right? Which,
yeah,
again, DreamDAO has many things that they will have this connection to DreamDAO well beyond, hopefully, that they're independent and then they can be mentors, but like this is meant to catalyze their careers in the impactful side of Web3. So that's a more of a technical definition of what we're doing. We're doing lectures, we're flying kids out to conferences and hosting cool events. We're matching kids to internship opportunities so that they develop like the momentum to be contributors without our help. But it's also an incubator for how to create an effective digital first community of practice. So, and what I'm getting increasingly bullish on or like optimistic about is small communities. And we only have 40 kids in DreamDAO versus like the alumni network of, you know, Civics Unplugged is like 2000, right? And like there's definitely kids that feel very lost in the shuffle there. And like we're able to experiment a lot more rapidly in this smaller community. We're even like 40, we have like 40 kids and like 40 mentors. Overall, it's just like very intimate vibe. We're able to experiment on things because like in some ways the stakes are a lot lower, right? Because and it does kind of remind me of like the like nation versus state, like states can experiment a lot more. So and the other it's like a complex relationship between Civics Unplugged and DreamDAO because there's like infinitely more energy focused on Web3 versus Civics. So like just like one indicator of that is like, you know, there's like a significant more followers of the DreamDAO Twitter than the Civics Unplugged Twitter, even though Civics Unplugged is the parent organization. So that's made me think a lot about attention and how do we transmute attention toward one thing to something else. And the alchemy that I'm working on right now includes pivoting the attention from Web3, which includes lots of scam stuff, to regen Web3, which is just basically saying, how do we leverage, you know, blockchain, cryptocurrency, et cetera, to work on projects that are genuinely impactful and regenerative, right? And of democracy, of natural ecosystems, et cetera. There's like a lot of projects there happening, which is cool.
And this is for folks listening, this is a play off of like, if you've on Twitter, you see like hashtag DGen, which is like a kind of like moniker for people that get into quickly
for money.
For money, basically, in crypto spaces, whereas regen is obviously less so about the money and more so about the regeneration of systems.
Exactly. And so the rapidity of the transmutation, in part because of the bear market, so people can't be just shouting about price all the time. Like, I feel pretty optimistic about being able to, I don't know what the timeline is, but like being able to shift people's attention. Like, okay, it's like the world's attention so much of it has gone to Web3. It's like, let's the real like web. I don't mince my words when I say Web3 will be a failure if it was not greatly additive or even critical to reversing humanity's downward spiral.
Yeah, right.
I think people just need to hear like that provocation that you have a whole new set of this is not for your, not just for your personal gain, right? This is this thing that itself is so mushy, right? Like, what is Web3? Like, if we don't get ahead of it and define like what success looks like, we are going to keep building useless technologies we want to brand as Web3. And then that's the first transmutation from Web3 to region Web3. But what I mean by that is like Web3 just needs to be region Web3, right? Mm. Mm. And then so, but I'm also memeing into existence, region Web3, which is help people understand, oh, technology should be used for regenerative purposes. But it's much bigger than Web3, right? Which people tend to think of as blockchain, rightfully so. It's about the regenerative web, which is any technologies that we can leverage to regenerate what we value, right? Which is like our democracies, our communities, natural ecosystems, like our water, our soil, et cetera. And you do not need blockchain for every part of that regenerative, the movement does not mm-hmm. work. Not every component of it needs blockchain.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, I want to take I think that's a good sense. You've given a good sense of like what you've been working on, what you work on. And then at the same time, like what we talked about in our conversation 2 months ago was how this has positioned you to be sort of like in between a lot of different scenes, right? Yeah. So you've got like Web3, you've got like through Civics Unplugged, like the kind of like progressive American culture systems changey kind of vibe. Right. You have got these like Gen Z, like youth culture. And then you've also got a connection to this sort of like liminal web, whatever you want to call it, that this podcast and folks like John Vervaeke are a part of, or like Game B scene, like Daniel Schmachtenberger and his whole like theory of change, and being kind of in that whole, web of networks. You know, I'm curious if you sort of like, because most people who are listening to this podcast are either firmly embedded in like one, maybe two of those networks, and they're just kind of doing their job, or they're just not in the world like you are. And so they're not like tuned in to the kind of shifts that are happening in the larger networks. So I'm curious, like, if, you know, I name all of those different networks or communities that you're a part of, those trends, if you step back, like what is it that you see happening as you engage with all these different people, projects, spaces, technologies, cultures, communities? What is it that you see happening from your vantage point, kind of standing, straddling all these different spaces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, other spaces I straddle include like the populist independent political movements. I'm friends with a lot of the leading figures there. I'm friends with a lot of people in the entertainment space, like really high up entertainment space. And becoming increasingly friends with people in the climate activists and climate innovation worlds. I think overall, just seeing an exponentially greater than a few years ago desire to collaborate and potentially shift their approaches to making the world better. I like developing relationships with like some very, very powerful, very wealthy people that are surprisingly receptive to potential projects that are hyper local and extremely practical versus like, and meant to demonstrate. So for example, the approach that I like success for me 12 months from now is that I have helped catalyze the creation of one to three really powerful and inspiring hyperlocal projects. One of them, for example, in inner city Chicago, where let's figure out how do we create a whole lot of agency within a neighborhood of youth that we can document their agency growing as individuals and as a collective to increase their neighborhoods, to beautify and help their neighborhood, whatever way. Like I have a bunch of ideas, but like it's ultimately about them learning to do whatever it takes to build a better collective future, right? And then once you've, so documentation of that is there's lots of experimentation there, and documentation of that one example is critical to inspiring thousands of similar projects like across the country and beyond. Like success for that particular project of like neighborhood empowerment is like 5 years from now, again, thousands of neighborhoods and like groups of kids and all around, and with intergenerational support, but thousands of these similar sort of success stories in the coming years. And then, you know, similarly, like I want to help heavily document a hyperlocal like soil regeneration project from that helps people understand like all that it takes and all the value that can create. Yes, from a carbon sequestration standpoint, but also just like, you know, biodiversity, like birds will come and flowers and, you know, microbes will emerge from intentional human work. And so how do we inspire that all over the world, right? We need to get a lot better at investing in really inspiring individual projects that can be very powerfully documented with world-class storytellers that inspire, again, like thousands of people to follow suit. And then eventually, like, it becomes part of culture, normal culture, to, for example, if I'm a young person, like, either as part of my Eagle Scout project or there's a new thing that's created, more likely, that is all about like young people learning how to create hyperlocal, like carbon sequestration, natural ecosystem regeneration projects.
Oh yeah. So good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the kind of rough name that I have there is called Carbon Knights. Like, it's a,
that's cool. Like K-N-I-G-H-T-S.
What?
Knights?
Oh no. So, no, I mean, that would be funny. That would be like, I don't know. I mean, part of the point is that like, it sounds like that as well. Like N-I-T-S.
Yeah.
Might be a little bit too corny.
Carbonites. Oh, I get it now. That's fun. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, but all this stuff is so amazing. It sounds like you're saying, what I'm hearing you say is like, okay, I'm going to translate this into my words. You're not saying this, right? You're not saying this because I know that you are talking to these. And as we discussed last time, I don't want you to necessarily say who you're talking to, but very wealthy, powerful people who are in positions of that you would probably know, that you've heard of, that are in positions of power in the current world
system. Anyone would have heard of. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that they, right, these people are like, this is just my framing, not yours, like are realizing that the writing is on the wall, that the systems that they have benefited from and produced and helped maintain aren't going to take us there.
For sure.
Right. And so they're now looking, as you say, exponentially increasing desire to collaborate probably is coupled with an increasing sense of anxiety that if we don't figure out a way forward that involves a deep sense of collaboration, that might involve radical adjustments of our worldview and kind of how we spend our money. Like they're open to that now, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yep. I'd say the first thing that they're open to is that their previous approaches have not worked. And the second thing they're open to is just people that they trust or increasingly trust ideas, right? Mm. So just some advice to people listening, you know, what does it take to get to that point? Well, I guess the first thing is that you have to show that you're really committed to building a better world and not just talking about it, right? Like, I think why you are fascinated by me, Daniel, is because I am not just talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I think like there's nothing that like earns more respect than actually like, oh, you could have been like on the track to be a vice president at Google and you chose to work with high schoolers out of like this like unclear path forward about reversing the meta crisis. Like there's no ulterior motive there, right? It's, and I was actually, it was funny. I was thinking about this, like, what if like that was the, what if something like multiple years of like service was like the, like a minimum requirement to like, that a lot of people have for people that they want, that they even consider to run for office or or like collaborate with on like or like invest in for like a I don't know, many different things. And like would people that are not, their heart's not in it gain? That's like great. Like if people that are going to gain anything are forced to do 2 years of service pretend that they care about people. It's like, that's not bad actually.
And also probably they'll end up caring about people because we tend to have views that align with what we do. And if you spend 2 years serving people.
Right. Oh, 100%. I would easily say, right, that my heart has expanded by working with young people for 3 years, right? Like I give myself credit for taking that very difficult leap of cutting out all the benefits that I got from Google, right? But I'm a different person than I was 3 years ago, like a lot.
Yeah. It's in all this, you know, you're also, you know, I think in some level of connection, one of the networks you're connected to is this sort of like John Vervaeke liminal metamodern Game B space. And I'm curious, like from this sort of zoomed out perspective that you have access to, like how do you see this space? Like what is its purpose? What's its function? What do you see its opportunity is?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So I would not be here without John Vervaeke. Like that's the first thing I'll say is, you know, his Awakening from the Meaning Crisis series was tremendously influential of Civics Unplugged. And just how I carry myself, right? And just think like it was one of many things that helped me reorient my value system, helped me develop the language to talk about self bullshitting and like, just get a better relationship with truth seeking in general. And then like, I don't know what the order was, but you know, discover Daniel Schmachtenberger, Jordan Hall, right? All these people have been tremendously influential to me. And I think like my main critique of the space is one that I'm trying to help address or critiques, which is a great lack of diversity of many kinds, actually, not just racial, gender, age. Like these are all lacking, right? But and geographic, right? These are all lacking, but you know, what do people that live in very different areas and are different age, like the different perspectives, right? On and I'm actually like a good example of this, right? Like I'm able to bring critiques, right? Or even just observe what's great about the metamodern space, because I'm not, I am different than the usual suspects. Yeah, so I think like so much of what the space believes in is critical for any leadership today. Often it's communicated in an indecipherable way to most people that have no intention of being philosopher kings. They just kind of want to be humble servants, right? But there's a lot of relevant practical things that can be unearthed, right? If you, yeah, if we're thoughtful about how do we teach this stuff in a more practically accessible and useful way to more people. I think ultimately I can't really take you seriously if you are trapped by like a cliche mimetic like worldview in terms of like a collaborator, right? Like I think
say more about what you mean by that cliche mimetic.
So like you know, if you get outraged by everything that doesn't matter what tribe, just like if you get mad at everything that Nancy Pelosi wants you to get mad at, I can't take you seriously.
Oh, I see. So you kind of, am I right in that you're kind of articulating one of the values of this space is that it's articulating a kind of meta ideological, again, that's not a very accessible language, but an ideological worldview that you think is critical for people you want to collaborate with at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think this boils down to processes that can be embodied that need to be made more accessible. Like, you know, an event happens, for example, and one thing you can do is just think about, okay, what do all these different socio-political factions want me to think about this and why? Right? Like, versus like just getting mad. Like,
right.
So yeah, like one of my biggest critiques of the space is that it's just not more influential, which is like I would love for someone to critique me and saying like, you should be way more influential, Gary. Great, help me. It's like I'm basically saying like the spirit, the core like force driving, the meta modern, whatever we want to call it, space is a very good one and badly needed to be more influential. And I hope that there's this broad recognition at Emerge that we don't have much time.
Yeah.
We don't have like any more time, right, for another generation of ideologically trapped like super influential people,
right? Yeah,
like that's, and I never actually articulated that way. It's like, yeah, that's kind of why, that's part of why there's so much urgency to me. Like, I mean, especially because like a lot of the like all of my mentees, you know, let's even super simplify this, like let's say all of them wanted to run for office, like none of them would even get elected for another like 10 years, right? So or like most of them. So you know, yeah. the earth is burning, like democracy is falling apart, like we cannot afford to have people that just purely get a lot of retweets and they're just feeding into like these calcified like mimetic argument, like,
just, I don't even know what to, just cycles.
No, I think this is like part of what was so inspiring to me in our previous conversation was I had a sense, it was more of a felt sense. I don't know if you actually said this directly, but that like you were like encountering the work of people like John Vervaeke and Daniel Schmachtenberger and others, and you were in your own way sort of translating it for the young people that you work with, and you were seeing it sort of light them up, right? That there is some kind of critical truth that is often inaccessibly offered in this sort of philosophical and mimetic network that's been building over here. And that, you know, it's a matter in part of diversity and a part of accessibility. And those two things are interrelated, I think, because you don't have enough diverse perspectives critiquing to help us unfold this kind of work in a way that makes it more accessible to more people. But it could provide both a kind of like frame, we call it philosophy or like worldview on the one hand, but also perhaps a set of practices that would help a generation of people not get captured by ideology and instead live a life of service to the whole. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. So how do we, I mean, I'm just, everything that I'm doing is kind of reverse engineering from like a much better future for humanity and the planet. And I see like, you know, tons of potential in the emerge field that, and I'm glad to, you know, Tomas is an awesome person. I was very impressed by,
he's great,
by his intelligence and humility.
Yeah,
it's a rare combination. So I feel cautiously optimistic, right, about the future of the field. I think like as soon as you talk to like any of the people that I'm bringing to the conference in Austin, they're just going to be that like felt like realization that you can like, you know, today we send out a survey, right, to like all the emerge participants. They would like technically say yes, we need more diversity. It's like, okay, but how about you feel it, right? You feel like the quality of, you know, there's something just much so additive, right? And even catalytic to of having this young, brilliant women that are, you know, around us.
And well, and one thing you said at the, I think towards the end of the last conversation was like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the way I heard it was like, my theory of change is something like just empower the fuck out of Gen Z. And that doesn't mean just give them money, right? That's like rendering empowerment through the frame of capitalism. We're talking about give them the best frames, the best philosophies, the best practices of self-transformation, the best practices of relational, you know, cultivation, everything. Empower the fuck out of Gen Z. And that's like, practically speaking, a pretty good bet on the future.
For sure. And I don't like, there's plenty of things that need to be done. And I would say tied for first is invest heavily in meta-modern minded diverse Gen Z, like there's that around the world. Like that's that know how to coordinate with each other digitally very effectively, understand different technologies that are emerging that could be helpful, AI, blockchain, and also just tech that came before as well, and ancient practices that are increasingly relevant today. Like combining all these qualities. It's not even asking. Yeah, it's not. There's not like friction in convince. Like, there's no convincing, really, of so many. We won't run out of Gen Zers that already want to learn these things. If they're just like made aware, like, oh yeah, great, I didn't even know that there was like, you know, an intellectual and action scene that wanted to empower me in this way, right? Like, I think it's a matter of making sure that there is that educational and empowerment infrastructure to yes. absorb yeah. more young people, which doesn't exist yet. Like, I'm working on a pretty small scale, but I need, like, even personally, like, I need more people to be thinking about how do we fund Civics Unplugged, and also how do we apply a lot of the lessons from Civics Unplugged and other people, right, to greatly expand the educational infrastructure of, like, basically young people that are operating in the time between two worlds and want to build a new world. Like, that's it's just obvious to me that that is a tied for first in terms of bottlenecks preventing us from totally. Building a better future.
I would say tied for first, maybe generally speaking, like,
yeah.
which is a big thing to say, like, as a planet yeah. or as a species, it's tied for yeah. first for the, like, liminal emerge metamodern network.
And similarly, it's arguably
it might be first.
For sure.
Because it's an educational network, I think of it, you know? And so this intergenerational transfer, I mean, it's like, what else?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just offering my perspective.
I agree, right? I would say, like, in any space, right, that is trying to get better at the systems change that it's trying to make, like, if they feel stagnant or not moving, not accelerating fast enough, like, super energetic, passionate, values aligned, tech savvy, you know, gap filling in terms of perspectives and, like, noticing issues, like, what an easy investment, especially because they're not asking for post-college, post-grad, like, they're not PhDs, like, asking for super high salaries to cover, again, this goes back to debt, right? Like, mm-hmm. a lot of this has to go back to debt.
Yeah.
And my very practical, I am someone that is both, you know, can appreciate these, like, big ideas that are often in these, like, you know, in Daniel Schmachtenberger podcasts, right? But I'm also very practical, where it's like, if we do not jailbreak young people out of the default system that is very excited to onboard talented young people to work at Google
yeah.
or Goldman Sachs, if we do not jailbreak them out of that, and a lot of that does have to do with money, but a lot of that has to do with, helping them feel valued in ways that were not even close. Yeah. And so why it's urgent for the emerge field, like, especially, like, a lot of the leaders of it, to show that they are really excited about young people emerging as leaders of emerge mm-hmm. is that that's the only way emerge can compete over this young talent. Because Google, for example, is giving free headphones, like a ton of money for a summer internship, free food, like, all these things, right? So, and I think millennials were unable to kind of resist that, in part because there was just so much less conversation about purpose, 10 years ago. But I think Gen Z, if just given enough money and just this feel, again, they just feel valued and they are not tokenized, but rather just, like, treated as people that do bring different and necessary things to the table. I do feel optimistic about that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And I'm really excited for, I'm more excited for the Emerge conference because of all of this. And I'd say, you know, I don't, for my part, I think often, well, I would just share two critiques that I have of the space that my podcast is a part of. And this critique is, you know, certainly could be pointed at me, I'm sure by many. It's like, or this podcast project anyways, it's like, there's a lot of talking without enough action, which, fair enough, this is a podcast. Podcasts happen through talking. You know, I'm also doing stuff when I'm not talking on the podcast. You know, I have other responsibilities. But then there's another part of it that I think more apt, which is that there's a way in which it's kind of circle jerky. And this has to do with the critique of it being like lack of diversity and inaccessible, where it's like, if you look at the rosters of all the different podcasts, it's just like the same people kind of going through, having slightly different conversations.
It is a circuit.
Yeah, it's a circuit. It's become a circuit. It didn't used to be a circuit. I remember when it wasn't a circuit, when I was just finding these random people and I was like, whoa, you have a lot in common. And they'd never been on a podcast before together, a podcast show before together. That is no longer the case. The network has evolved to a different point in its lifespan. Yeah,
interesting.
And now we are ready to do something together. And for me, part of why I'm so excited to talk to you and so excited that you're going to be at the conference is that you're offering a portal to meaningful action that we can cohere around that is good and important and grounded. And so, you know, I want to just like, to whatever degree I have influence in this network, is like, please, let's do something good. Let's not just talk about things. Let's take what Gary's saying like very seriously. Like, we can actually influence the lives of many young people who want to give their lives to service. Most of us, many of us, I'm 35. Many people that I talk to are 45, 55, 60. We don't have our lives ahead of us, you know, but we can actually make a huge difference by empowering these young people who it doesn't take much to wake them up. They're already pretty much aware that the system is falling apart.
Do you know what they have to wake up to? And this is like, I love that we're talking about this. They have to wake up to that there are adults that are not just purely self-interested.
Exactly.
That's what they have to wake up to. And to many young people, and I'm the furthest thing from perfect, like mentor, anything. Like, I have plenty of flaws, right? But I am one of the first, if not first, adults besides their parents that actually cares about them. And I'm, it's unfortunate that that's the case. And we need to greatly, this is actually very powerful. Like, older people have a ton of power to fundamentally change a young person's life by changing their understanding of what other people are.
By demonstrating a different way of being.
By demonstrating a different way of being, right? And so I think one of the most important philosophers for me, and I'm influenced by so many people that I don't want to get it wrong, but I feel like Kierkegaard really helped me, or it's like just one of the existentials or multiple that were just like, you define what humanity is by demonstrating what it is, by embodying at least on as it, like, you are at least expanding what it is, because other people are demonstrating what humanity, everyone is like responsible for defining what humanity is. So is humanity one that is like almost like I like to use AI almost like pejorative, like, are you almost like an AI where you will always just pick the thing that will enrich you the most personally?
Paperclip maximizer. Yeah.
Yes. Are you, it sucks to say, right? How many people are flesh colored paperclip maximizers, right? And there's nothing to be I think there's something to be proud of in realizing that in yourself, right? If anyone's listening to that, it's like, oh shit. Like
I'm a recovering paperclip maximizer. I have many dimensions of my psyche that still, you know, after lots of work,
for sure,
relentlessly maximize paperclip. It's very hard to uninstall.
For sure. We're all, you know, this is the default system that really encourages us to maximize paperclips. But how can you like surprise yourself in the choices you make? Where you're taking a leap. I'm trying to think about how I think about things. Like, in part, how I can justify like doing something that's clearly against my immediate self-interest is a belief in humanity that,
yes,
these like that we can almost like make real the idea of like that cliche idea of karma, where like there's enough goodwill and like growing of culture of gratitude and like remembering that like life is a miracle, that is because of other people in your life that, you know, allowed you to get to where you are. Like, I guess part of what I'm banking on to make it not just pure self-sacrifice is like creating a culture where it is part of being a good person to support people that have supported you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's related to what I'm. Yeah, regardless of when you think that you will be paid back, like it is subverting the status quo to do anything that is not directly in your immediate self-interest, because we are taught to have a very scarcity mindset, and I think one thing that almost like subconsciously trains you to see other possibilities for than just like being hyper transactional and short-term thinking with people is being part of a community where people are noticing your generosity to other people.
Yeah.
And they will be more willing to help you.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't help them directly in the past, but you helped them indirectly by supporting the community or other people in the community that then push the community forward.
Yes.
So like this, you know, building Civics Unplugged and DreamDAO helped me recognize just like theoretically ideas such as circular economy, because there's like a circular economy of gratitude that emerges in a community that like is genuinely supportive of each other. And you can contrast this with like the broader economy where everyone is just like, if you don't give me dollars, like I'm not going to transact with you, right? I don't think that you're going to pay me back. So I'm not going to do anything on goodwill.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, it's like having lived at the Monastic Academy, this community where I live, where, you know, there's like 30 people here, and it's so vivid, right? That what you speak about, that the nature of this economy of, you know, time and energy and action is circular, right? Like you see the consequences of it, they come back to you. You see the actions of others, it affects the way you see them. It also affects the way that we see ourselves as a community, right? That you see somebody be generous and you're like, oh, we're a generous community, right? And that all of these things like feed each other.
100%. 100%.
And like my hope in part is that this Emerge gathering can be a time when we really, because I do think that this network, I've been with it since I think the very beginning, before Emerge, this bigger organization was Emerge, right? And so I've seen it come into being, I've seen it begin to cohere. And my hope is that we can really begin to become self-aware as a network and be like, well, like, so what are we for? Like, what is this? How do we serve the whole? Because we talk about it a lot, And then can we actually do it with our actions? And as you say, like maybe make a surprising choice, you know, make a surprising choice.
Surprising choice, something, a choice that would surprise me of many individuals in the Emerge field, not because I don't believe in people, it's just because it's so challenging, right? To mentor or just be of service, right? To a high schooler that is smart and critical.
Yeah.
It's very vulnerable to be in that role, where like kind of mentee is like not, is it's an oversimplification of like the relationship I have with these young people. They teach me a lot, and but I think like it'll be more obviously a mutual mentorship for a lot of the people in the field. It's going to be very vulnerable for them.
Totally. I had somebody in the podcast because
they're going to be like, I don't know what you're saying, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get it.
Somebody called it a gentering. Have you heard this term?
Gentering. Interesting.
So there's mentoring. That's typically like somebody older, you know, in a relationship with somebody younger. Gentering with somebody younger, teaching somebody who's older. And that's really what I want, is that kind of mutuality. Because like you say, like that's going to help everything be more accessible and be more grounded. I used to have this idea, just, I want to say this because it's so alive right now for me. I used to have this idea of like the inner Peace Corps, where people who are in this kind of coach culture. And like, you know, going to Boulder and doing all this transformation can just give back, you know, 2 to 5 hours a week working with people who don't have access to this kind of perspectives and practices. And so maybe people at Emerge will step forward and enter into that kind of thing. Yeah.
Here's an idea that I think a lot about, like, this doesn't require blockchain, but blockchain is useful actually in this case for a couple of reasons. So imagine there was some kind of mindfulness transform meta crisis education cohort based course, and adults, when they buy their seat, they're buying a seat inherently. They're like, you're always buying a seat for a younger person or someone that is like underrepresented in the field. And you know, the headline attraction for this cohort-based course might be like the content, right? But the thing that people will realize is just as important is being in a diverse community talking about these things, right? And practicing whatever is being encouraged to practice. And then why, you know, you could do this without blockchain NFTs, but like what is it's kind of cool to be able to collect transformative experiences that you sponsored. So we should make this happen, to be honest. Like we have successfully sort of piloted this with DreamDAO, membership tokens are free for the kids and require an adult to have one, bought one basically inherently.
Excellent. I mean, yeah. Gonna close this conversation in just a couple of minutes because lunch is being served now at the monastery. But I want to say, Gary, I'm just like really pleased that we could have this conversation and feel really inspired to support you in whatever way that I can, and to cajole, inspire, and poke this larger network into seeing the opportunity that I see you as offering. Feel very enrolled, I suppose, in the kind of vision that you're articulating and the kind of groundedness with which you're operationalizing it. So really appreciating you for your work and excited to meet you when you're in Austin and meet the kids that you're going to be traveling with. Really happy that this is happening this way.
Yeah. So I'm so excited. I'm so glad I'm grateful to be invited to talk to you today. Really love how much you clearly care about the future of the planet and the field that I also increasingly care about. Let's you and I challenge ourselves to stick to figure out how do we operationalize this idea of gentership, mentorship, you know, mutual mentorship thing, where what if, you know, people could deviate from the default? What if the default was something like a ticket was buying a ticket for an underrepresented group, like by default? Mm-hmm. And it was actually, it was like all of a sudden the ticket becomes something that you collect, right? Mm. So any sort of transformative experience, like, because, and what I was saying to Tomas was like, Emerge, the first US gathering should be transformative, right? Should be like, whoa, like, especially for the people that are not like already like identify as like an Emerge field participant.
Yeah.
That should be a transformative experience. And so let's practice what we said of putting things into practice. So that's my challenge to you, to hold ourselves accountable here.